So both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. This week, mercifully, we complete the sorry tale of Genesis chapter 19. If the Bible skeptics want a chapter to turn to in casting doubt on the divine and spiritual nature of the Bible, they couldn't do better than to turn to this chapter. It reads almost like a compendium of human sexual and behavioral corruption, not to mention the descriptions of destructive divine wrath that are contained in the chapter. It is no wonder that even the Swedenborgian commentaries largely pass this chapter by in silence, or give it only the most cursory treatment. Even Swedenborg himself seems to weary of this chapter as he enters into its final section. Yes, he does interpret it. He is, after all, Swedenborg. But he does so in rather summary fashion, referring to earlier and later explanations for some of the details. In partial explanation of his short treatment of the chapter, he mentions the obvious. These things, he says, shock people's minds and offend their ears. And here I would mention once more that when we actually read the Bible, we find that it is not actually a nice book full of nice stories, as some of us might have thought when we came through Sunday school, but rather it is a hard-hitting human book full of human stories, including the good, the bad, and the ugly of human life. The Lord Jesus, while he was here on earth, also dealt with the good, the bad, and the ugly of human life. If we follow this story in its deeper meaning, we find that it deals with the ugliness of those who think that religion is just a matter of external observance and ritual without the deeper matters of love, understanding, justice, and compassion for our fellow human beings. These are the things that form religion's inner core. In other words, the story of Lot and his daughters is symbolic of those who practice superficial religion. Jesus was speaking of these when he said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites!" And listen to the metaphors that he uses. "You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides," and here the metaphors start, "you strain out a gnat, but swallow a camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but the inside is full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside will also be clean. Woe to you, you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs which look beautiful on the outside, but inside are full of dead people's bones and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to others as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." In our reading from Swedenborg, he gives descriptions almost as colorful of the nature of people who make a great show of outward religion, but inwardly are corrupt and foul. Now, Jesus encountered such people in the scribes and Pharisees, which he was lambasting in that passage, and those were the people who studied and taught the religious law of ancient Judaism. Though they knew it all, they knew their stuff, they did not practice it except in the most outward and superficial way. Yes, they did all the proper tithes and ritual cleansings and sacrifices, but they were not only critical and condemnatory of everyone who didn't live the way they did, just as Swedenborg describes them, but they also engaged in corruption and profiteering from their positions in religious authority. In other words, even though they looked religious, they were really in it for themselves. In Swedenborg's terms, they were ruled by self-love. So everything that made up their religion, and I put that in quotation marks, we could perhaps call it their religiosity, was impure because it was driven by selfish motives. Swedenborg has often been accused of being anti-Jewish because of his many harsh statements about both ancient and his contemporary Jews. And certainly there was a lot of anti-Semitic sentiment throughout Swedenborg's culture, which could easily have affected Swedenborg's view of the Jewish people. However, I prefer to think of his descriptions of the superficial and corrupt natures of the Jews, quote-unquote, as a description of the human condition. When we look at the story of Lot and how he was corrupted by his own apathy and his focus on saving his own skin, we see a reflection of all who take the easy, external way of religion. In the New Testament, the Jews also come in for heavy criticism by the Lord himself and by the various biblical writers. That, I believe, is largely because, from the Bible's point of view, the Jewish religion was the leading religion of that day, and yet its followers, instead of being the leading light for the world as they should have been, had corrupted their own religion and given it a bad name because of their greedy and selfish lives. To those who are given great responsibility, much greater accountability is expected. Now, is it only the Jews who do this to their religion? I don't think so. The history of Christianity right up to the present day is full of church leaders who have corrupted this beautiful religion in their pursuit of personal wealth, pleasure, and power. A decade ago, it was the fundamentalist Christian televangelists who were the focus of the exposés of religious corruption as the American public discovered that the same men and women who preached Jesus, Jesus, Jesus on TV were racking up enormous personal wealth and sleeping with prostitutes in hotel rooms. Today, the focus of the media's wrath is on the Roman Catholic Church, with its terrible crimes not only of child abuse on the part of some of its priests, but of the cover-ups engaged in by bishops and archbishops going right on up the church hierarchy. Unless this become merely an exercise in finger-pointing, our own church has not been without its scandals, corruptions, and bitter battles over money and power, as we in the Massachusetts Association are now only too painfully aware. Yes, superficial religion is not limited to the Jews. It is a universal human curse. And though we could spend time decrying the evils of those churches, clergy, and leading lay people out there who have made a mockery of their religion, the real point of the Bible story is not to give us ammunition in pointing the finger at others. Rather, it is to make us conscious of our own faults that need examination and correcting. When Jesus confronted the corrupt religious authorities of his day with their hypocrisy, the point was not so much to fuel our religious indignation or righteous indignation at those who misused their religion for personal power and gain, but to let it serve as an object lesson for each one of us when we are tempted to act in similar ways. The Bible story is the story of each one of us. And if we can believe it, even the whole culture in which we live is the story of each one of us. Swedenborg gives us the concept of the universal human, that society at large reflects the smaller group and also reflects the individual. And I believe that when we look at the society around us, we are looking at a reflection of our own souls within. If we find ourselves pointing fingers of blame at all those terrible corrupt scribes and Pharisees out there, we should be aware that our fingers are also pointing squarely at our own soul. This is expressed another way in the classic words of John Donne. Therefore, never son to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Donne understood and expressed beautifully in his poetry that the sickness and death of all is the sickness and death of each one of us. Of course, this does not mean we should just ignore all the corruption out there in our society. Televangelists, priests, and other church and society leaders, not to mention ordinary lay people, must be put on notice that if they engage in hypocritical and corrupt behavior, they will be brought to account for it. That if they use their positions of spiritual and worldly power to engage in practices of worldly greed and debauchery, they will pay the price. And from our perspective, if they don't pay the price here, they will pay the price in the afterlife. So it's not that we are not supposed to confront the evils of our society. We certainly are. And yet, when we have confronted the corruption in our society, we have only waged half the battle. And that is not the most difficult half. because our greatest struggle is to confront the corrupt superficiality within our own selves, in our own lives, in our own souls. The message of Lot and the message of the Lord to the scribes and Pharisees is a message to all who consider themselves to be religious and yet don't live up to the ideals of their own religion. Lot was a nephew of Abraham who received the call of God, and he must have known about this great calling of God that his uncle was following as Lot traveled along with him. And yet, Lot chose to live among the corrupt people of Sodom. The scribes and Pharisees were the called and chosen religious leaders of the ancient Jews, and yet they used their position for personal power and privilege. Now what do we, who are blessed with the incredible depths of an entirely new revelation of spiritual understanding, what do we do with these spiritual treasures that have been entrusted to us? I sometimes ask the question, if an outside observer were to look at the members of our church, would they notice any difference from those of any other church? Does the fact that we belong to the New Jerusalem Church cause us to go beyond the ordinary ranks of our community, not in great shows of religious piety, that's easy to do, but rather in a life full of acts of care and compassion for the human beings who surround us on every side? Would somebody looking know the difference? Would we measure up to what Jesus said when he said, "They will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another"? And looking at our church, both at this congregation and our association and of the denomination of which we are a part, what have we done and what are we doing with the great blessings of material and spiritual wealth that have been entrusted to us? I can't think of another church that has greater treasures of spiritual understanding, or for our numbers, greater treasures of spiritual wealth. What are we doing with all that wealth on both levels that has been given to us? In all our struggles to move the church forward, are we acting merely from a desire for self-preservation? Are we acting just to preserve the church that we and our families attend and benefit from? Or are we truly interested in serving the spiritual needs of the community, the state, and the continent where our church has its home? These are ultimate questions of our own spiritual worth, our own spiritual goals, and the spiritual goals of our church. These are questions that even Jesus himself faced inside of himself when he confronted the temptation to be merely right rather than being compassionate. And the Lord gave us another metaphor, a more positive metaphor, to move us out of the curse of superficial religion. He said, "When we have experienced the new wine of deeper understanding, of deeper spiritual religion, we must put it into new wineskins. And those new wineskins are a life of constant growing understanding and compassion for our fellow human beings."